Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
History isn't just a bunch of names and dates and facts. It's the collection of all the stories throughout human history that explain how and why we got here. Welcome to the History Unplugged podcast, where we look at the forgotten, neglected, strange, and even counterfactual stories that made our world what it is. I'm your host, Scott Rank. In this episode, we're going to be looking at a deathbed promise from a daughter to a mother, which leads the daughter on a journey to write about her grandfather, who is a famous war hero. But this journey had a terrible destination, the discovery that he was a Nazi war criminal. Today's guest is the daughter, Sylvia Foti, author of the book The Nazi's Granddaughter. Her mother was dying, and she wanted to preserve family history, so she asked Sylvia to write a book about Foti's grandfather, Jonas Noreika, a famous World War II hero. Foti's grandmother tries to intervene, begging her granddaughter not to write about her husband, and she said, just let the history lie. Foti had no idea that in keeping her promise to her mother, her discoveries would bring her to a personal crisis, unearthing Holocaust denial, and expose an official cover-up by the Lithuanian government that resulted in an internationally followed lawsuit. Jonas Noreika was actually a Lithuanian known as General Storm. He led an uprising that won the country of Lithuania back from the communists, only to have it fall under Nazi control. He was an official during the Holocaust and chief of the second largest region in the nation during the Nazi occupation, yet he became a prisoner in a Nazi concentration camp. Foti set out to write a heroic biography about her famous grandfather, but as she dug deeper, she encountered so much evidence proving, as she says, my flesh and blood hero was a Jew killer, even I could no longer believe the lie. So we'll be looking at all sorts of things in this episode, like how should our family's past, shameful or noble, shape our identity? How one man can be revered as a hero, having a grammar school named after him, and yet be a villain responsible for the deaths of thousands? Why some European countries are still in denial about their role in the Holocaust, and how the secret was kept until now. Hope you enjoyed this discussion with Sylvia Foti. Sylvia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott. So happy to be here.
Well, you have a new book, and it's a story of World War II in Eastern Europe, but it's also a personal story, and that's pretty clear because your book begins with a deathbed promise. So can you tell me about that and how this whole story begins?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in Chicago in the 1960s, listening to stories about my very famous grandfather, Jonas Noreika, in Lithuania, how he fought the communists twice, and just lots of things that he did. And as I was growing up, I really admired him, even though I had never met him. And my mom was working on a book about him, and she meant to write the book. The problem is that in the year 2000, she went into the hospital and she was very sick. It was kind of a sudden death. We didn't know that it was happening. And she was only 60 years old. And she calls me over to the bed, says, Sylvia, you have to write the book. And I could not accept the fact she was dying. And I said, no, mom, you're going to write the book. You'll be fine. And she said, no, everybody expects it. And the Lithuanian community here in Chicago really did expect her to write this definitive biography on her father. And it was a lifelong project of hers. And I guess she knew she had run out of time and she needed to pass this on to me. And so, of course, you know, I said yes. The next day, I came back and she was already in a coma. So that's how the story started.
Well, for the Lithuanian community, having an expectation that a book be written about him, he's obviously important in the community's history. So who was Jonas Noreika? And also, for listeners who don't know, what was happening in Lithuania during World War II, and why was he important, or at least what was he known for by the community?
Well, he was born in 1910, and he became a captain in the Lithuanian army. And in 1940, the communists came and took over the country, and he wanted to fight against them. And so he joined in a big rebellion against the communists. And in 1941, he led the northwestern part of the country, and they won. So Lithuania won their country back from the communists. But then in 1941, right at that time, the Nazis came in and took over Lithuania. So the Nazis had been part of Lithuania for 3 years. And during that time, my grandfather had gotten the position of being the chief of Šiauliai. And I grew up hearing the story that he was, you know, a nationalist, an ardent Lithuanian, and was working for the Germans on the Lithuanians' behalf and kind of acting like a double agent. And then in 1945, the communists came back. 1944, 45, the communists came back. So now Lithuania was under communist rule again. And he led a rebellion, or tried to form a rebellion against the communists. And he was caught, and was caught in 1946, and they took him into the KGB prison. He was tortured for about a year, and then he died at the age of 36 in 1947. And then ever since, Lithuania has been under communist rule until 1990, and then Lithuania got its independence again, and so it's been independent for 31 years now. And since 1990, they've been wanting to find their heroes. And my grandfather came up as a big hero.
How primarily was he remembered as a hero? What were certain attributes that people gave to him that made him this national hero?
Well, he got the Cross of the Vitus in 1997, which is the highest award that you can give to anyone posthumously. He had a school named after him in the town that he was born. He has a couple streets named after him. His code name in the second rebellion that he tried to form was General Storm. So people remember him as General Zvetra or General Storm.
When you begin this project, when you go to Lithuania, what were the first things that you uncovered? Where did you go to? How did you try to research his legacy? And what did you find out in the beginning?
So this is where, you know, all I knew was that he was a hero. And my mom died February 2000, and my grandmother survived her mother. And in July, now my grandmother had a heart attack, and now she's on her deathbed. And she calls me over, and she says, "Sylvia, what's going on with the book?" And I said, "Don't worry, Mochete," which means grandmother in Lithuanian. "I'm going to work on it. I'm young. I was 38 then. I'm not going to let it go the way mom did. I'm going to get this done." And I had been a journalist for 20 years then. And my grandmother says, "Don't write the book." And I'm like, "What do you mean don't write the book? I promised mom. Of course I have to write the book." And she says, "Just let history lie. There's no reason to dig around." And I didn't understand why she said that. And I said, "Well, I have to. I promised mom." And she just kind of rolled over in bed and faced the wall. And I thought that, you know, that was the end of that conversation. And I left her. And when I came back, then she was in a coma and had died a couple of weeks later. So the both of them wanted to be buried in Lithuania. And my brother, who's in California, and I brought their cremains. They wanted to be cremated, brought their cremains to Lithuania and had a funeral for them. And then shortly after that funeral, we were invited to the school named after him. And we get to the school and the children are, you know, greeting us. They've got flowers and singing songs. And we meet the director, and the director says, "Thank you, Sylvia. I understand you took over the book project from your mother. You're such a good daughter." And I said, "Yeah, you know, as long as I'm here, why don't you tell me why you named the school after my grandfather?" And he says, "Well, you know, he had this terrible Russian name for all those years that we were under communist rule. And so as soon as we got our independence, we wanted a good patriotic Lithuanian name. Your grandfather was born here, so of course we named the school after him." And I thought that was the end of the story. And then he pulls me to the side and he says, but you know, I got a lot of grief over naming the school after your grandfather. And I said, grief from who? And he said, from the Jews. And I said, what could the Jews possibly say about my grandfather? And he said, well, he was accused of killing Jews. And I said, what? And I could not believe it. I could not believe it. So I had to sit down and, you know, he could tell that I was very upset. And he said, but don't worry about it. That's all in the past. It's just communist propaganda. You know, it's okay. It's okay. And I was very upset by this. I didn't want to believe it. I came home and then I talked to my father about this. And I said, Dad, did you ever hear the story about Jonas Noreika and killing Jews? And he said, yeah, I heard it, you know. And I'm like, I can't believe nobody ever told me about this. And he said, why would we talk about it? It's just all lies. It doesn't mean anything. It's communist propaganda. So that's how I first heard this. And I called this the rumor for many years. And I think like everybody else here in Chicago, I went into denial and I believed that it was communist propaganda. But over the years, I couldn't let it go. You know, I knew as a journalist, there's no way I could ignore this and I'd have to look into it. And I eventually got to the point where, okay, I'll look into it and maybe I'll exonerate him. So that at least propelled me to look into that whole period of the Nazi occupation. So as I started to really look, I came across a document that my grandfather had written in 1933, and it's called Pekel Galva Lietuvi, or Raise Your Head Lithuanian. And I'm kind of looking this document over, and it's this 32-page booklet, and I'm reading it, and by the time I'm done, I was really disgusted. That booklet was all about the Jews in Lithuania, and he basically was writing things like, the Jews own everything here. It's not fair. Lithuania should be for Lithuanians. Lithuanians, stop buying anything that the Jews made. Let's boycott whatever was made by the Jews. And it was like this for 32 pages. So by the end of that, I was already thinking, this is not good. This is certainly proof that he had these anti-Semitic feelings. He wrote it when he was 22 and he had just joined the army then. So then now I'm thinking, okay, I better look into this. And, you know, I grew up only hearing stories about the communists. I really didn't hear much about the Nazis. And I was so ignorant that at that time, I did not even know about the Holocaust in Lithuania. I knew about the Holocaust in Germany, in Poland, you know, Austria. But I did not even know that we had a Holocaust. Nobody talked about that. And I went to Lithuanian school and it never came up. Then I came across a book and it had these Holocaust documents in it from Lithuania. And this was the big turning point for me. I found a document that my grandfather had signed while he was chief of the district of Šiauliai. And the document was from 1941, August 22nd. And this document called for the gathering and rounding up of all Jews and half-Jews in the region of Šiauliai, and to send them to a ghetto in Žagarė. I had never heard of Žagarė. What's Žagarė? So I look it up, and it's a little town in northern Lithuania, right on the border of Latvia. And then I start doing a little bit more research. What happened to these Jews in Žagarė? Well, in October, they were all slaughtered.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's kind of like, you know, where I really, that was my big turning point.
Right. So could you mention more about this, of who you talked to when you were researching the concentration camps in Lithuania and how you got, whether written sources or perhaps personal testimony about your grandfather, where did you go to next?
Yeah. Well, there were no concentration camps in Lithuania. Lithuania had over 200,000 Jews at the time, and 95% were murdered in Lithuania. And so Lithuania has, unfortunately, the highest percentage of Jews killed in Lithuania. Well, my mom had collected lots of material on her father But it was all kind of like the heroic side, what I call the heroic side. She had 3,000 pages of KGB transcripts from when he was in the KGB prison, and just lots and lots of material, lots of articles written about him. A book was written about him, published by the Genocide Center in Lithuania. But the documents that are damaging to him were found in the Sholé archives. And he had signed roughly 1,000 documents while he was district chief, but 68 of them concern the Holocaust. So I, in 2013, went to Lithuania on a 7-week research trip. And that's when I talked to family members, and I talked to someone who was part of that uprising in 1941. He was 17 at the time, but my grandfather was 30. But he at least kind of gave me what was going on in the town where my grandfather led the uprising from, which is called Plungia. And then I also talked to Jewish survivors. They ended up surviving by escaping, going to the Soviet Union. But he came back, this one especially, Jakobas Bunka, came back to Plungia, to this town. And when he came back, he had done a lot of research to find out what happened to all the Jews in that town. And somebody else had written a book during this time. So I had kind of, what I had done in the end is interview a lot of Jews and a lot of Lithuanians, and Jews had their story, which implicated my grandfather, and Lithuanians had their story, which said basically my grandfather was a big hero, but nobody put these two stories together. And so this is the first time a narrative was created that combined the Lithuanian version and the Jewish version and put it all together chronologically, more or less, from beginning to end.
So what was the Jewish story? What was the Lithuanian story? And because you're trying to depict your grandfather as a human who contains multitudes, as all of us do, what do you think is the synthesized story that is a closer to the true version?
I think he was very nationalistic, and he really did want Lithuania to be free. And this is true of every Lithuanian. They want their country to be free. They don't want it occupied by the Soviet Union or Germany, or Poland had occupied parts of it in its history. So he was very pro-Lithuanian. But a terrible rumor surfaced during that time in which all Jews were considered communists. And that somehow turned or allowed a lot of Lithuanians to believe that all Jews were the enemy. As a result, I think that that was used as a big excuse to murder them. And this, of course, was mixed in with just hatred towards Jews that I think Lithuanians had and a lot of people in Europe had. And it was a crazy time. And, you know, the whole Nazi Germany, the Nazis did order the killing of the Jews. That much is true. But what I uncovered is that many Lithuanians were not so reluctant about that. They joined in on that. And I have come to believe that my grandfather was one of them. He did not resist this. He joined it enthusiastically. The synthesis part is, in 1941, I only heard about him saving Lithuania from the communists. The part that I also did not know, but now know, is that it was at the exact same time Germany started its Operation Barbarossa. So the date of the uprising in Lithuania, it's called a 5-day uprising, is June 21st, 1941. And that's also the exact same day of the beginning of Operation Barbarossa. So Lithuania could have never won the war against the communists unless they had help from the Germans. So that's how they won that war. And so they had to collaborate with the German Nazis. And part of that collaboration was to kill the communists, but that became almost a euphemism for killing Jews. So go ahead. Well, the horrible thing that I found out was he was in charge in Plungia, where 2,000 Jews were murdered. He was in charge in Telšė, where another 2,000 Jews were murdered. And he was in charge of the whole Sholé region, where another 4,000 Jews were murdered. So that's 8,000 Jews under his watch.
Hey everyone, Scott here. We're going to take a very short break for a word from our sponsors.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Are you a man who thinks about the Roman Empire at least once a day? According to a recent internet meme, you definitely do. And why shouldn't you? Here's a clip from Tom Holland talking about Rome at the very height of its power.
When tourists go to the Colosseum, they're not really going there, I suspect, most of them, because they're admirers of Flavian architecture. I suspect that they're going there because it's the kind of the shiver that you get of going to a place where blood sports have happened.
To listen to more of this discussion, check out the History Unplugged podcast on the podcast player of your choice.
What did it look like, as far as you can tell? Were people simply rounded up and shot, or was it something else?
Yeah, they were rounded up, taken to a ghetto, which was often a synagogue or an area of town. And then they were taken in batches into the woods. Some were far enough away where the townspeople couldn't hear the screaming. So it was a strategic plan. And every single Jew was shot by a bullet. There were no concentration camps, no gas chambers or anything like that in Lithuania. It was one bullet after another.
I'm curious. How was this kept secret until now? And it sounds like it was a fairly open secret, with the school being named after him, but then the Jewish community in Lithuania disapproving of this, so it sounds like the memory still survives, but you didn't know about it, so it wasn't common knowledge. Why do you think it wasn't common knowledge until now?
It's still not common knowledge now. It's only, you know, my book isn't even out yet. It's only coming out March 9th. So it's just beginning to become more common knowledge, and this is only about my grandfather. And I only concentrated on my grandfather. I didn't want to concentrate on anything else, really. It was just enough psychologically for me to deal with what was going on with my grandfather. I think the reason why it was kept such a big secret is that it was a combination of factors. One is that Lithuania was occupied by the Soviet Union until 1990. So that sort of served as a deep freezer of information, just that alone. All Jews who were killed were Soviet citizens. So they, even the Soviet Union didn't say it was Jews who were killed. They just said Soviet citizens were killed. Couple that with Lithuanians didn't want to take credit for that. They just kind of let people assume it was the Nazis, and they liked that story and it made them look better. And it was a cover-up. I think it was a cover-up.
Well, this story is obviously still ongoing because you've worked with different people on recognizing what's happened. But before getting into that, I imagine for you, this has been a long process of reexamining your past, learning about someone who was a family and also national hero as a completely different side to them. And what is your take on this? And just to give you a sense of what I'm thinking as I ask that question, I mean, there are many people in history that contain multitudes. I don't condone anything that people do, but simply understand what it was at the time of what they did, that different people in extreme situations will have to collaborate with unsavory figures. They'll perceive different people to be enemies that we look upon in horror now, but somehow they may have been able to reconcile it in their minds in a way that made sense to them and let them sleep at night. So trying to understand this, what is your take on all this and remembering a family past and how it shapes your identity today?
Hatred is a powerful force. I think Lithuania was put in a cauldron that no country should be put through, but many countries have been. These forcible occupations were very difficult for the country, and I think they took it out on the Jews, because the Jews were weaker than the Lithuanians, did not have as much power within that country, and they took it out on them. And I think it was, I mean, the whole Holocaust is just unbelievable. It's some kind of hysteria that took over all of Europe. I have personally just, my whole identity has changed a great deal about this. You know, being someone who's just so proud of my grandfather and being such a proud Lithuanian. And it was one thing to discover this horrible secret about him, but it was another thing to face the denial about it as well, even though these documents are pretty black and white. I think that it's a trauma also for Lithuania. I mean, of course, it's a big trauma for the Jews, what happened, but today it's going to be a trauma for Lithuanians to come to terms with this really horrible dark side of our history. And it's a shock. It's just going to be a shock.
Right. And you have been involved with a lawyer living in California named Grant Gochin, who has issued lawsuits trying to cease the honoring of Jonas Noreika as a World War II hero. So can you tell me about that process and why is it important for Lithuania in 2021 to, for many people, still not come to terms with what happened 80 years ago?
Grant's not a lawyer. He hired lawyers to do this. So my connection with him only came about 3 years ago in 2018. So both of us were working independently. I was working, you know, on my story about my grandfather, and he had lost about 100 relatives in the Holocaust in Lithuania. He grew up in South Africa and then came here to the United States. But his story started out with trying to get a passport to Lithuania when Lithuania first got its independence. He was greeted with a lot of anti-Semitism at that point, and he had to sue the government just to get a passport for being Jewish. Then after that, more Jews were able to get passports. So he kind of opened the gate for that. Then after that, he started digging into his own family's past and had discovered that my grandfather played a big role in killing his relatives during the Holocaust. And just the dichotomy of my grandfather being revered as a hero. Like, it's one thing to just try to hide that he did it, but it's another thing to make it a big grand lie and, you know, give him this big hero status. So at first he thought it was a big mistake. And he tried to get it done, I guess, in a friendly way, but was greeted, you know, saying that they did not believe him. So he ended up, the Genocide Center in Lithuania is like the great arbiter of history in Lithuania. And so whenever you know, the politicians there say, well, we're not experts, we're not historians, we don't know what happened 80 years ago. That's why we have the Genocide Center. They have a building of historians who look into all this. And they based their case on my grandfather entirely on the KGB transcripts, which were from 45, 46. And it's true that these 3,000 pages do not say anything about him killing the Jews. But in those 3,000 pages, we're only concerned about the rebellion that he was trying to start against the Soviets. And so that's all they really cared about. And so because there was no mention of him killing Jews in 3,000 pages, that was given as proof that he had nothing to do with it. So that those all came from the Vilnius archives, the special archives in Vilnius. But just going north from Vilnius, about an hour north, is the Cholet archives. And these archives have his signature on all kinds of documents that are concerned with the Holocaust in Lithuania. So Grant and I connected 3 years ago. And when we connected, we decided to join forces because he had information and I had information. And then we started sharing this information and collaborating with each other. And we just could not believe, it. And we just thought, how could us two citizens, just regular individuals, come up with all this information all by ourselves and the government of Lithuania can't do it and come out with the right story? So that's how we joined forces.
Hey everyone, Scott here. One more brief word from our sponsors.
After Teddy Roosevelt's failed third-party presidential run, he thought that he would reassemble the Rough Riders for a final charge against the Germans in World War I by launching a cavalry attack against 50-caliber machine guns. Here's an interview with Bill Hazelgrove to look at this incredible story.
Teddy Roosevelt was one of these people who seemed indestructible. And that's why I think a lot of Americans wanted him to go, because in a way, he was their Superman.
To listen to this full interview, check out the History Unplugged podcast on the podcast player of your choice. We all know that hard times create hard men create good times create soft men create hard times. That's how the cycle of history works, right? Well, as guest Dan Carlin explains, that's not exactly the case.
You had mentioned, you know, what we had talked about with Kennedy being elected because, you know, who did better at the debate or who's going to lower my taxes or all these banal things 2 years before 100 million plus people are killed in a thermonuclear war, right? Did you elect the right guy then?
To listen to more of this History Unplugged interview with Dan Carlin about why the end is always near, search for History Unplugged on the podcast player of your choice.
And to the larger question of how you have been received by Lithuanians, I imagine there's been strong pushback against you raising awareness on this issue. Looking at the topic of how a nation deals with its past, I lived in Turkey for a number of years. I studied the Ottoman Empire. There is still not a real reckoning in Turkey of the Armenian genocide of 1915. And I've read about different Ottomanists who try to think, you know, why is that? Why is this a taboo subject that you simply cannot talk about in many sections of Turkish society 106 years after the fact? And some have theorized that, well, for some, it's the feeling that, I mean, other nations, Russia, European powers committed atrocities too, but for some reason, it's Turkey. We're the ones who have to own up to all the things in our past when others really get a pass and a blind eye on what happened in their colonies. And it's not really about the past, it's about the present. So there are a number of factors, and it's very hard to nail down. But what sort of reception have you received in this effort, and why do you think this is such still a hotly contested issue so many decades after the fact?
When I came out with my story in 2018, I came out more publicly with it in an article in Salon. I was greeted with a lot of hate and acrimony, threats. But I think, you know, the reason is Lithuania's whole psyche is built on being a victim. And I grew up with all this too. Poor Lithuania, we've been a victim of the Soviets, and now we've been a victim of the Nazis, and then we've been a victim of the Soviets. Lithuania is just a saint, you know, just this wonderful spirit that everybody just wants to trample. We are so good. We have done no wrong. It's just everybody who stamps on us. So that's kind of the psyche of Lithuania. And to hear that Lithuania has this horrible dark side where they trample on the Jews like this, it does not compute. So it takes a long time to wrap your mind around the idea that we were not just victims, that we were also victimizers. And this, I think, really gets at human nature. You know, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. It's there's something in us that, given the chance, we will not do good for our neighbor if we can gain something out of it. And it's scary.
I guess this gets to a really big question about history and understanding the past, where on the one hand, like you've been describing, just blind ultranationalism can create huge blind spots where one cannot see anything bad in their past, or if it's brought to light, there's always an excuse or an explanation away. But then on the other hand, seeing a culture as somehow completely degenerate is a problem too. So with the example that the fascism of Germany in the 1930s, many people understand that well, leading to this fanaticism and explaining the Holocaust in World War II. But most people don't think there's any sort of genetic component of the German people that makes them more vicious than others. Whereas sometimes that same sort of nuance hasn't been given to, say, Japan, where there's a similar sort of fascism that came around the 1930s, 1940s, and this ultra-patriotism. But it's not as if there's this same sort of, it's not as if there's a genetic component to the Japanese people that make them like this. It was this confluence of historical factors and things like that. That's at least what a co-host and I are looking at with the World War II and the Pacific Theater Right Now series that we're doing. So I suppose it's the big question of, what do you think are healthy ways of understanding one's own history, where you openly acknowledge that horrible things have happened, but try to suss out and hold on to the good things for a better tomorrow. So have you taken away anything looking at this matter and trying to do your best to bring it to light?
I think, you know, anybody who lives through any kind of trauma, and, you know, in many ways, just everybody's childhood is a trauma, and looking back and trying to understand what and how and why it all happened, you have to look, you know, I hold on to the good. I have a strong Catholic faith, so I lean on that a lot. The only way, you can move forward and in a really healthy way is to accept what happened. And once you accept it in a real deep emotional level, and it will take a lot of crying. I mean, I certainly did a lot of crying over this. You'll come out on the other side and be ready to, you know, like for me to meet Grant, someone who my grandfather was, was responsible for killing his relatives. That was so frightening to me. But because I had faced the past of my country, I could meet him and I could say I'm ashamed of what Lithuanians did. And that made him cry. And it was very healing for both of us. So I think that there can be a reconciliation based on the truth.
Right. And as you've shown here, that things that happened in the past, I mean, still matter today. So it's an ongoing process to work with that and understand it. So, well, thanks for going over all this. And I mean, this is a very deep story. And for listeners who want to dive into it more, your book is called The Nazi's Granddaughter. And if people want to find out what you're up to online and also find out where to purchase your book, where is the best place to go to?
Well, my website is silviafoti.com, SilviaFoti.com. And it's on Amazon and it'll be in bookstores. So that's where you can get it. The Nazi's Granddaughter.
All right. We'll link to that and appreciate you joining us and sharing your story with us.
Thank you, Scott.
All right. That is all for today's episode. As a first order of business, I need to thank the Knowlton's Rangers, and I'll explain what that is in a second. And they are the USO, Kristen Lee, Willie from New Jersey, Sumo 41, Sergeant Hooch, Wire Meets Wood Guitars at WMWGuitars.com, Bill Ivey, Tom from Ohio, Salvador Sanchez, Dane Carlson from Linwood, Washington, Rob from Chicago, Nick Brooks, Michael Piccinetti, Michael from New York, Jeff Mitchell, owner of Mountain West Commercial Las Vegas, Josh Reddick, Jake Harrington, Josh from BFW Post 2285, David Santee, Chris C., and Baron Frieza. Now, if you'd like to support History Unplugged and help it grow, there are three easy ways to do so. First, subscribe to the show and leave a review on the podcast player of your choice. This helps other people discover the show. Second, join our Facebook group. And here you can discuss recent episodes with fellow listeners, mention what you'd like to see on the show in the future and get way more out of the show, and just look for History Unplugged on Facebook. Third, become a member of the Knowlton's Rangers. The Knowlton's Rangers were an elite reconnaissance and espionage detachment of the Continental Army established by George Washington, but it's also the membership group of History Unplugged, and here you can really dive in way deeper with the show. You can check it out by going to Patreon, patreon.com/unplugged. If you join at the Scout level, you get early access to new podcast episodes, and you get completely ad-free versions of the entire back catalog of more than 500 episodes. Plus, everything is neatly categorized, so if you want to listen to something about the Middle Ages and skip all the Civil War stuff or vice versa, you can easily find an old episode from 3 years ago that, if you're just looking on Apple Podcasts, would be buried in the feed. If you join the Intelligence Officer level, you get all the same stuff, but access to a growing catalog of now more than 60 premium episodes that come out bi-weekly, including a multi-part series on the life of Audie Murphy, the most decorated combat soldier in World War II, a series on French Foreign Legion fighters in World War I, one on Teddy Roosevelt's years in the Dakota Badlands, and a series on Nazi attempts to assassinate FDR, Churchill, and Stalin in 1943. Lastly, if you join the Spymaster level, you get all the same stuff as level 1 and 2, but you also get a shout-out to you and or your business at the end of each episode. You can choose a historical topic on absolutely anything, and I'll base an hour-long episode on it. Plus, you get a 3-pack of hardcover books. So again, check it all out by going to patreon.com/unplugged. Well, that's all for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and see you next time.